Hello and welcome to the first episode of Heart of the Holts 2019-20 season podcast. My name is Ryan Pitcher and today I'm joined by fellow Heart of the Holt contributor Tom Hendry. Okay, Tom, thank you for joining us here this evening for the first episode. Unfortunately, we were due to have another member of the Heart of the Holt team, but unfortunately, Dan couldn't make it. So we've had to kind of rejig things around, but I'm sure Tom is up to the job. So first of all, I guess we best dissect a little bit the Spurs game on Saturday. Tom, you were there. Can you sum up your thoughts and sentiments on the performance and the result in a few words?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be part of the team. It was a really interesting game. I really enjoyed the day. It's a new ground to go to for all the people who are interested in visiting all the grounds. So obviously, if you did White Hart Lane, you've got to
How many have you done now, if you don't mind me?
I think I've done 37 across... Not across England. I've done some in Portugal, France, and obviously on apps it counts Cardiff as an away day, so as a Wales. So anyway, but no, it was a great game, great day. We held, you could say the second best team in Europe for 75-80 minutes, especially with, if you go back to January and we lost 3-0 to Wigan. How can you think back then that we'd be playing at Tottenham away? It didn't look possible. But the game itself, I was quite impressed and I was proud of the lads with what they achieved for the amount of time. You could clearly see, being there and obviously on TV too, that they became tired. But that's understandable. But I think, I think Dino said it after the game too, we just got to hold the ball better. And I think we could see that in the game, that it had to... I think our ball distribution as well had to be a bit better. For example,
there were times during the game I thought, particularly on the counter, and there was a spot during the game where we knocked it about for a good 40 seconds to a minute and played some really nice stuff where it went out to the left hand side. So there were little spells of the game where they were marginal. Obviously, Spurs had quite a lot of the ball, but there were spells in the game that we looked all right, we looked comfortable on the ball, and that certainly shows promising signs for when we play the teams that are going to be in and around us, doesn't it?
I was watching you had goals on Sunday and then also Match of the Day. It's great to be on Match of the Day. I got home from the game on Saturday and totally forgot about Match of the Day, because obviously 3 years without watching it week in, week out.
You don't have to listen to people like Steve Claridge anymore.
No.
That's totally the greatest thing. That is the greatest thing about Premier League football, not having to listen to Steve Claridge. Carry on. Sorry, I do apologise.
No, it's fine. What listening to their analysis after the game, it was quite humbling to actually listen to. I watched the Norwich game against Liverpool and I think they've given a chance. The commentators and the pundits have given a chance to all the promoted teams that have come up. Like they said about Norwich that they attacked well in the second half. They said about Sheffield that they attacked well and they held Bournemouth well. And I know we've got Bournemouth on Saturday and I know they didn't play to their strengths, but it's quite good to listen to them giving the promoted sides a chance, and especially obviously Villa. We lost 3-1. Bournemouth got a better result in as they got 1 point. They're ahead of us in the table. Sorry, Sheffield United are ahead of us in the table and they got 1 point. But listening to what they were talking about is that we held the ball well in the first half, and obviously listening to what other Tottenham fans are saying too, they struggled. Well, maybe not struggled, but they held. It was hard to break us down for the majority of the game, but Christian Eriksen, a player who is wanted by Real Madrid, changed the game.
And changed it.
we don't have a Christian Eriksen to bring off on the bench, you know, on the bench, off onto the pitch. But not a lot of clubs do who will be around us all season. I think we're in for a great ride this season. And I think, you know, we're in for us, you know, I think a lot of Villa fans will be able to enjoy this season because of what they'll be able to see and what Villa will have to offer throughout the season.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, apart from the bit where everyone's given people a chance, apart from TalkSport, if you're listening to that nonsense.
Don't get me started on TalkSport.
In terms of, enough about that for now. Of course, a few eyebrows were raised when the teams were announced, especially in the fullback areas, no Gilbert or Target. It seems to be a bit of a trend this weekend where Premier League clubs seem to have stuck with what they had and didn't play any of the new boys. We saw, you know, the likes of Chelsea doing it. You saw, obviously, Villa doing it. You've got to say that Elmo and Taylor, you know, for them especially, I don't mean that too derogative, performed. And what really, can you see Dino sticking with these two as the season progresses? Or can you see the two newbies coming in?
I can see them phasing out throughout the season, but it doesn't mean that it has to be now, or doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't mean it has to be January. It could be any time, you know, anyone could pick up an injury or have a bad performance. I think that's the positives that Villa has to look at. They have so many players in the same position. For example, we have four centre mids or three centre defensive mids with Douglas Luiz, Hourihane, and also Makamba. And we have four fullbacks who all have to play for their position. And
I would find describing Conor Hourihane as a defensive midfield player though as difficult. I know he's played there, don't get me wrong, and I'm not calling you incorrect or calling you out on that, but I'd find it very difficult to call him a central defensive midfield player, even though he's been asked to do the job there.
No, I totally agree. It's not his position that he obviously wants to play in. But, you know, I would rather Jack Grealish and McGinn push up rather than Hourihane, even though Hourihane can do a job. Perhaps, you know, looking at the game, and we'll come on to this in a bit with the substitutions made, perhaps, you know, Hourihane was the wrong person to go off. As I said, we'll come on to that in a bit. But, you know, I think as the season progresses, in the game especially, Elmo had a weaker game, possibly because it was a harder side for him. But Taylor, I think for me, I would not change Taylor for Saturday, only because he had a strong game, and I think a lot of us, like, there was challenges that he himself, I think, last season would never have made, and I think his link-up play last season with El Ghazi, and possibly this Saturday, like the Saturday just gone to get at Tottenham. I think he did that too, where his link-up play was substantial. And I think, you know, possibly changing it for Target, you know,
might upset the apple cart, as you might say. Don't get me wrong, is I've been extremely critical of Neil Taylor historically. You know, I find him a little bit one-dimensional, and, you know, he just seems to play it a little bit square most of the time. You know, it's a no frills sort of player, you know, and generally speaking, is those sorts of players, as we saw, maybe we're saying what someone like, say, an Ashley Westwood when he was at Villa, obviously in the central defensive midfielder role, you know, they aren't praised enough, and they're not really high. Even if they have an okay game, you don't really tend to notice too much. You know, it's kind of, you know, but out of the two is I would say that Elmo is typically the strongest, but I thought he was quite poor going into the season. I thought, you know what, Elmo's probably got another season left in him. Taylor I'd completely written off, but, you know, hats off to Neil Taylor. He did have a solid game, and I was very impressed with the way that he supported up the park. But defensively, he did a sound job. Not necessarily in the tackling aspect of things, but I think looking after his man, moving him out, you know, and diluting the threat, I think you might say.
Yeah, like I remember it was the first half, it was right in front of where I was standing with all the other Villa fans, and he came towards us, like the top, I think it was Carl Walker-Peters came towards us, or it was Carl Walker-Peters, and it was Eric Miller. They came towards us with the ball. And, you know, I think old Neil Taylor would have made a rash challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think the problem with Neil Taylor in the past is he was never going to get over what he did to Seamus Coleman. I think that was his problem, you know, for majority of last season and the season before, that he would not make a challenge because he was too scared. And I think since Dean Smith has come in, or since that run of 10 like games that we won, I think his tackling aspect has come back. And that's the Neil Taylor that we signed. That's the Neil Taylor that we wanted to see. And that's the Neil Taylor overall that I think that represents his country every year. And I think, I think, you know, it's going to be hard to drop him, but I'm not saying don't give Target a chance. Perhaps Target's better. We haven't seen a lot of Target, and I've seen a couple of games of Gilbert in the preseason, and I was so impressed with Gilbert. I remember going to a match, talking to my dad, saying, "Watch Gilbert. I bet you can't wait to see Gilbert." And he came after the match. He said to me, "He was outstanding." And I think he's a fan's favourite already, Gilbert. I think
he will be. Deliveries as well. I love his deliveries. He looks really.
He's so skillful too.
Totally agree. Now, some supporters, I'm sorry to move on, obviously we've got quite a bit to cover, but some supporters were critical of Wesley's performance on Saturday. Now, looking at it, do you think they're fair in doing that when you consider, you know, as you say, we're away at, you know, easily a top three club, you know, the runners up in Europe last year. And, you know, I'm sure Dino and his backroom team would have asked him to do a job in terms of dropping deep, trying to bring others into play. And we knew it was going to be a bit laborious. Do you think, you know, I don't know whether you've seen any of this criticism, but surely this type of game isn't a fair appraisal of what he's got to offer, you know, in the long term, is it?
No, I totally agree. I think it's quite hard to, it's quite harsh to criticise him after one game. I for myself, you know, I didn't think he had a great game, but I didn't criticise him for stuff that he did. I think he was definitely better in the first half than the second, and I think a lot of people have said that, and I would have seen that too. But that's not saying in the first half, he really held up the play, I think, a lot. You know,
he had a part to play in the goal.
He's very strong. If you've seen Jack Grealish talk in the week, he's quite a hard guy. And to be honest, he comes across that way. He's not someone who I would want to mess with on a football pitch.
No.
And in the second half, when it all came, I think there was a VAR shout for John McGinn for a red card. He was the first man there, one of the first men there to stick up for his teammate. And I think that's a great addition to have to the squad. Someone who can back you up, and also who can, you know, who can be tough with the ball as well as without the ball.
I think we'll definitely see more in terms of, I'm very intrigued about how Saturday will go, because I think this is one of those games where, you know, it's going to be a raucous atmosphere. We're going to be, you know, it's a first game back, and, you know, I'm hoping, you know, what with the atmosphere and the occasion, you know, we're going to be pushing forward quite a bit. So getting him inside of the box and seeing what he's capable of there, you're going to see a totally different player.
Yes. I looked at Saturday and I wished there was more crosses coming into the box, because, you know, as every football fan does, if you've never heard of a player, you go on YouTube and you look him up. And looking on YouTube, I've seen him scoring headers for fun, and also penalties for fun. But you look at his heading aspect, more crosses. I wish there was more crosses coming in on Saturday, but you've got to look at the opposition you're playing against. There's Kyle Walker-Peters, who is a very fast, versatile young player. And also on the other side, you've got Danny Rose, who he was an England left-back. You know, he's not someone who gets beaten every week, but, you know, Trezeguet had the beating of him most of the game. There was one cross in the whole game for the Villa, and he wasn't there. But that doesn't mean it wasn't his fault. Perhaps Trezeguet could have held it up a bit more. I think that's what Dean Smith will work on in the next few weeks, and probably work on in the game too, where these crosses have got they will come off, and I think that's what's going to be worked on, because that is his strong game, that his heading aspect. Yeah. And I think he will be a great asset for the future.
I mean, you don't want to say he's a target man. You know, I think he's got more about him than that. And I'm sure you're not when you're saying about his heading ability. You know, as you say, you know, we've all done our research and that, and you can clearly see that he's good on the ball. And you know, you wouldn't want to cascade him into that direct sort of striker. As I say, I'm sure we'll see more from him. You touched upon Trezeguet a minute ago, and you know, whilst we're on the subject of Trezeguet, we may as well look at the substitutions as a whole. Now, Dino alluded to after the game, you know, he basically said that he thought that, you know, in hindsight, his changes may have been wrong. Obviously, Trezeguet come on for the last half an hour or so. Kodja came on for the last 15 and Douglas Luiz for the last 10. Now, were you disappointed or happy with their contributions? What did you make of them?
No, you know, I listened to what Dean Smith had to say after the game, and that's why I think a lot of Villa fans love Dean Smith. It's gone the days of excuses of the players. He took responsibility for maybe not a mistake, but his own decisions. And that's what I think Villa fans love to see, that, and it's different. Not every manager has that responsibility, and they admit it. But, yeah, you know, Jota came on for Trezeguet for the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes. And Trezeguet had a fantastic game. Like, he was passing players like we'd never seen. You know, well, we haven't seen a Villa player do that in many years. And if it wasn't for Harry Winks' tackle, I think he would have scored. And he was cutting in the first half. I believe, still to this day, I think he should have passed it to Wesley, and Wesley could have passed it on, and we would have scored. But, you know, that's just hopeful thinking. Mm-hmm. And then that's football as it is. But, you know, Kodja came on for Wesley, and Wesley in the second half wasn't doing a great deal much, but I think he still offered a bit more than Kodja did. Kodja had a bit of a quiet game when he came on, a bit kind of disappointed with Kodja, because Kodja, he's got to impress, he's got to improve, and obviously with other transfer windows in international, you know, leagues still going on, these players, you know, Villa might want to ship them out if they're not going to not going to improve.
Yeah, I mean, with Kodja, you would say that, I mean, we can't afford to lose any other strikers really, but Kodja to me, you know, I imagine my. It's quite endearing, especially after what he did, you know, from a personality side, at least from a fan's view. And especially after what he did in his maiden season with the Villa, there's still that kind of, you know, semi-good rapport with between the fans and JK. But I don't know. To me, he's since he came back from injury and he had all those issues and stuff, he hasn't been the same player. That's one.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And two is, I can't imagine, at least from afar, I can't imagine he's very easy to manage when he's not the main man.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. I think it's hard for him. I think Kodja works better with other people instead of Kodja on his own up front.
Sure.
As we've seen throughout the past seasons. But it's up to Kodja. It's, you know, Dean Smith can tell him what to do. He can coach him on what to do. But it's up to Kodja. We never know what Kodja is going to turn up on the day. Well, For one, you know, after his first season with the Villa, I still love Kodja. I think he's still quite an asset for the Villa. But I would love to see him do more. And I think if he can really get going,
yeah,
I think him and Wesley will be able to work, and Keenan Davis, I think they'll all be able to work off each other and improve off each other. And I'd love Kodja to fire some goals in this season, especially so he can do his celebrations in front of Old Trafford.
And going on to Douglas Luiz, obviously came on for the last few minutes. I'll tell you what I found particularly frustrating. So obviously, I think it's the right change. You know, we're at the time, you know, we've got 10 minutes left or so. And the scoreline is one each. And, you know, Hourihane, I have found historically, particularly later on in the games where he's been asked to do a job in terms of from a central defence midfielder perspective, he's just not quite been disciplined enough to do it for the full 90. So I think it's a good change. You know, you're trying to see out and get that point, right? And then he seemed to get caught up a little bit. A couple of times we were exposed, and I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking, Douglas, that's your area. You should just be literally parked in front of Engels and Mings. Why are you like? You shouldn't be any more than 5 to 10 meters away. And I think he got caught a couple of times.
Yeah, no, I agree. From watching the match, also after, you know, watching it on Match of the Day, and also when I was there, it was. I'd love to see Douglas Luiz. I was really impressed to see him come on. You know, I was quite excited to see him come on. But I saw Hourihan, and to be honest, especially, and Grealish, walking around almost, you know, they weren't really doing it, but they almost looked like they were just walking around in circles, looking for something to do that could possibly make an impact in the game. And I think that came to Grealish, and he lost the ball, which led to their second goal. And obviously, if it wasn't for a lucky deflection or ricochet, Harry Kane, you know, he was never going to miss that. But
you're not gonna blame. Well, and I'm sure you're not, by the way, when I say this, you're not gonna blame Jack Grealish exclusively for the goal. There was an element of luck, obviously. The thing that did frustrate me is, you know, did Jack take responsibility in his tweet later? Yeah, you know, I would have liked to have seen Jack kind of go, you know what, I hold my hands up on that one, because, you know, you kind of, I always like to go back to the source, not to play a blame game, but, you know, if someone loses the ball, that's where it starts. And then the things happen after that, you know, is a consequence of that. But with Jack, what I was, you know, I saw on Twitter someone mentioned, you know, they said they blamed Codger for that goal. They said, oh, Codger didn't show. You know, Jack had nowhere to put it. And I think, you know, I think when they looked over it on, I was watching a it wasn't Match of the Day, but it was another analysis program. It may have been Goals on Sunday. And they were saying, oh, no one was moving for him. But you're 3 minutes away from a point away at Spurs on the opening day. Put it anywhere.
Yeah,
put it anywhere.
I think we were all screaming for that when he got the ball. Just clear the ball.
Clear your line.
I think, you know, we go back to these past seasons in the Championship where Jack Grealish would have got out of that situation by dribbling it out. But, you know, as I said, I'm not blaming him. There was other things that led up to that moment. I think Villa were just on the cosh for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes. I think they were knackered. I think Jack Grealish, if you put that in the situation of 10 minutes played, if they were pressing him and like that, he would have cleared it. I trust him to clear it. And I think that's where Jack Grealish will be learning, looking back and learning into what, you know, different teams will go to different games and approach it differently. Especially, you know, you go to a team like Tottenham in the second half. I've never, you know, Villa haven't come up a team against like Tottenham like that for many years, where they've been pressing that much for that long time, that period of time. And I think that's what surprised Villa. I think we were caught off guard a few times. I think that's just, well, you know, as the saying goes, when you get back into the Premier League, it's welcome to the Premier League, because it can either be a great welcoming, or it can be a harsh welcoming. And I don't think it was either. I think, you know, going back, I think it was a wake-up call, because we're back in the Prem, and this is what we've worked hard for. You know, this is what the players have worked hard for. This is what the fans have waited for, and it's here. And I think we've just got to enjoy it. And I think the players have got to realise to stay here, they've got to work for it.
Yeah, listen, Tom, I totally agree. It's going to be a great journey. Now, we're going to have a little break. So we are going to have an ad break, and we'll be with you in a hot minute. After the break, we're going to be previewing the game against the Cherries this Saturday as the mighty Villa prepare to host Premier League football for the first time in 1,197 days. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you in a tick. As many of you will already be aware, Heart of the Holt is partnered with FansBet, the betting company where 50% of its profits is shared with fan pages like ourselves. Heart of the Holt is a not-for-profit page, and we don't make any money from sign-ups. FansBet is just like any other high street betting company. The only difference being is that 50% of any losing bets that you place will be given to us to spend on fan initiatives.
With this money, we were able to send dozens of underprivileged families to Villa Park last season and donate a large chunk of money to Project B6. The FansBet app is available to download on Apple or Android devices, and when registering, please select Heart of the Hole as your designated branch. Whilst we'd like our listeners who do enjoy a punt to sign up, we encourage all of you to gamble responsibly. You must be 18 years or over to register. Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome back. And so, Tom, just how much are you looking forward to the game this weekend? I mean, it's just great to be back, for me at least, and I'm sure everyone agrees. Premier League football just gives it a much greater edge than going to see the likes of Villa Millwall, Villa Barnsley, you know, particularly for midweek games. You're kind of after work, oh God, you know, slumming it in the Championship. And that's no disrespect for those, to those sorts of teams, but it's just a lot more difficult to have that guff in your belly for those sorts of fixtures. What do you reckon?
I can't wait. I honestly can't wait. I've been, obviously, with the changes that's happened down at Villa Park, with the new look Villa Park, I've probably driven past about five times before before Saturday, and I might drive past even, you know, tonight or tomorrow, whenever. I just can't wait to be back, and I can't wait to see Premier League flags flying at Villa Park once again, and especially just the Premier League logo on the pitch. I can't wait.
The pitch, the flags, just everything. I mean, it's just so much more better, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what we wish for, you know, for a few years, for many years. And I think with our downward spiral, I think it almost felt like we were already playing at a Championship ground with, you know, not many seats being filled. But I think it's a sellout for the next couple of matches. And to start off with that support, I think it's just going to be an amazing atmosphere. And to go back off last season, I think we haven't lost at home for 10 games, possibly, or maybe a bit less, something that I've read today. I think it'll be a great game.
Let's hope that figure's around 30 come the end of the season. Anyway, people often talk about how good a job Eddie Howe has done at Bournemouth, obviously our opponents this weekend. And there's absolutely no doubt in that. You talk about, you know, he's taken them from League One, having, you know, retired early, all the way through to the Premier League. Now, on a personal note, I do actually recall back in the Paul Lambert days, you know, when he was getting a bit of grief and I was campaigning for Eddie Howe to come to Villa back then. When you look at Bournemouth's finishing positions, interestingly enough, they are actually on a progressively downward spiral. So 16th in their first season, which obviously with that kind of fan base stadia, you know, is quite a small club in Premier League terms. And I'm sure they won't mind me saying 16th in their first season, all about staying up. And that surprised many. But then over the last 3 years, funnily enough, since the TV deal, coincidentally, 9th, 12th and 14th. Is this a worrying trend for them? And does this go to show just how competitive and difficult it has now become to keep your head above water in the Premier League?
I think for these, I'm going to call it smaller clubs too. You know, I think they're quite a well-established club over the last few years. And obviously it's true because they got up and they've stayed up. So that's great for them. And I think, but especially for teams like Bournemouth, I think TV deals are huge for these teams, like especially with Sheffield United coming up and Norwich. I think it's huge for those teams too. But for a team like Bournemouth, where their maximum capacity is 11 or 12,000, where they were in League One a few seasons ago, I think it's great for them to be in the Premier League. I think it's something different for the Premier League too. But also, I've never been to Bournemouth ground, and I wish to visit this year. But I think it's kind of, their grounds are kind of a fortress. But I think these teams do struggle when it comes to playing teams who are around them away from home. Then obviously, I think they do better when they're coming up against the big teams away from home because they've got more to play for. And it's on the grander stage. I totally agree. But I think Eddie Howe's done a fantastic job there. I was the same. I wish he could have come to Villa, but I don't, in a way, I think we'll see this season how Dean copes with the Premier League. And I think full trust, and I think he will. And I think by the end of the season, I don't think you'll see much difference between Eddie Howe and Dean Smith tactically. And also, I think they have the same agenda with getting these young stars in or young players in and working with them. And I think, you know, they're both English. I think they both have a lot of respect for each other. And I think it'll be almost like a game of chess on.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, listen, Eddie Howe is the shrewdest of operators in the transfer market. And I think that's the reason, you know, for the success. You're talking about, Ryan Fraser. I remember signing him a number of years ago on Football Manager, funnily enough, when he was actually playing for Aberdeen. Was it £400,000, you know, several years ago? Callum Wilson, 4 or 5 years back from Coventry, I think they paid £3 million. And you're talking about players like, the mainstay at the back, Steve Cook, 150K, back when they were slumming it down in League One. Funnily enough, I actually recall going to the old Division Three. It might have actually just changed where it was League Two. I think, you know, when they changed from Division Three to League Two and yes, they changed the team and they rebranded. I actually recall going to Bournemouth versus Lincoln and they hammered Lincoln 5-2. I've got a lot of friends that are Lincoln City fans and they hammered Lincoln 5-2 in that final at the Millennium Stadium while the new Wembley was being built. But that's a side issue. But and you do mention, I think their home form is going to be key for them. I'd be very intrigued to see how they set up this weekend. I mean, they're only good at home if Rudy Gusted ain't in town, who's obviously having a great time up at Middlesbrough. Now, do you think will change things from the Spurs game at all, both on team selection and set things up a little bit differently tactically? How do you see things playing out?
I think the only changes that could possibly be made is possibly maybe Makamba or Douglas Luiz coming in. If a change is made, it'll be for Hourihan. It won't be for Grealish or McGinn. And possibly fullbacks.
Yeah. I do apologise. Go on, carry on. I do apologise.
No, I was waiting for you to say something, but I think that's honestly, in my opinion, I think that could be the only changes made. I can't, you know, we can't change Engels or Mings because they're solid, but also because they're our main centre backs. We can't change McGinn or Grealish. They're our stars. Possibly, maybe bring Jota in. You know, give him a go from the start. I think he might be better from the start than coming off on, you know, from the bench.
But for who? You're not surely saying that you'd have him for Trezeguet, are you?
No, I think possibly El Ghazi because I think a player like what I've seen in pre-season with Jota, he doesn't really have one position. I think he's a very versatile player and he can mix up his game a lot. And I think that's what we use for our advantage. And I remember when he played for Blues, when he came on for Blues against the Villa, it was one player who I'd look out for and go, you know, probably because of his Spanish roots, but yeah. I think he was always one player you'd look out for and go, possibly he could create something. And he could be the danger man for Blues.
No, I totally agree. I think these kind of games are good for players like Jota. Games where, you know, you really want to be on top. I think these kind of games suit him. I don't think those kind of games, you know, when it's backs to the walls kind of stuff, as it was, you know, away at Spurs, because he's not your out and out conventional winger. Now, I'm not saying that Trezeguet is that, or El Ghazi has got that mould of an out and out winger. And Trezeguet to a certain degree, but Jota isn't. So he's not going to kind of, he's a bit of both in a sense where he's not going to run the fullbacks, is he? Let's face it, he's not going to run them. And when the ball lands at his feet with his back to goal, he's quite easy to nudge off the ball, seeing that it's quite lightweight. So I think this kind of game is more suited to it.
Yeah, I think it'll be exciting to see what team is picked on Saturday. I think these games so early on are really important to Villa because we can actually establish a team for these games, you know. And I think possibly we can establish a team for the season. I think
I was going to ask you about the measurability side of things. How important are these games so early on? Because these are the Bournemouth's the type of side that we should be competing with. It'll be interesting to see how far we've come along. And these are the sorts of sides. I mean, there's 6, 7, 8 of these sorts of sides, which, you know, they're going to be competing with each other to try and keep their head above water, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's the nature of the Premier League now. You've got an established top 4/5. Mm. I think from 6th to 8th, possibly 9th. I think you've got a few teams who will always be around there. And, you know, I have total respect for Wolves because I wish Villa might do it this season, but Wolves will be up there too. And then it goes from, I think, 10th to 13th, you get a few teams. And I think Villa and Bournemouth will be hanging around there. And I think from there onwards, you're in a relegation battle.
I totally agree with that. I think the thing is when people do pre-season, I see the amount of league tables that I've seen on social is ridiculous. Because let's face it, once you order the top 6, there might be one or two differentials. But after that, let's face it, it's just a guessing game. Has to be a guessing game. Yeah, there's going to be a few favourites to go down, and but it is a guessing game. It really absolutely does my head in when I see these league tables. It's just nigh on impossible. But anyway, before we start, obviously, wrapping things up, I just wanted to mention the Perslow interview that was on Sky Sports News a couple of nights ago, and what a pleasure it was to hear him talk so openly about the approach of the board and the owners and the money that we spent over the summer months. And quote unquote, trying to invest in assets that we can grow to protect the future financial growth of our football club. Now, in case you missed it or haven't yet seen it, here's a little snippet from it.
£127 million is a huge amount of money, but thanks to Sky and others, it's about a year's worth of television money. Okay. My board and I feel strongly that in the Premier League, we have an obligation to be competitive, to seek to be competitive, not to be promoted to the Premier League, spend no money, take some TV money and say thank you very much and, go back down probably in that scenario. Mm. So we feel like we've invested the additional TV money to try and make our great club competitive in the Premier League.
So the full interview can be viewed on the Sky Sports website, but Tom, what do you make of that? I mean, hearing that the owners quote felt an obligation to be competitive this season, and the spend itself, and just the overall good vibes at the moment in B6. What do you reckon?
I honestly, I love the interview. I did not know myself that he was going to be on the TV. So, but listening to it after, I think it was even better. Listening to what he was saying, I think listening to just I think it's just a whole approach to the questions. He taught Sky Sports, and I can't remember her name who was interviewing. I think he taught her a lesson as well. And he put Sky Sports in a different, way, because they obviously have their figures that they base their transfers on. And I think they came to the figure of 150 million. And Perso straight away said, as a football fan, he loved being on the show because he knows that that's incorrect. But he straight away came up and said it was around 120 million. Like, it's 30 million, obviously, with add-ons. But those add-ons only are possible if players do, if they achieve the add-ons. Otherwise, as he said, it was 10 million per player. I think that's brilliant business in this day and age. I think his interview was... It was quite welcoming. It was quite refreshing to hear.
I mean, we've said it. Well, I've said it before. Certainly, I mean, it was everything that's happened to Villa over the last 3 years, and even before that, obviously, with Randy Lerner, is not going up. When we lost the playoff final against Fulham, what a blessing in disguise. And things happen for a reason. And this now is the happiest I've been as a Villa fan for a dreadfully long time. I mean, I can't even remember the last time I was a happier and optimistic about our future. I think that's the thing is, you know, I work down south, and you know, I hear a lot of rival supporters, and you know, they go, oh, Villa aren't going to be doing much, are they? What little do they know? They don't even know about our owners. They don't know about the you know, the stuff that's going on at the stadium. They don't know that, you know, they see that they would like to grow, you know, make Villa Park bigger. They don't know what the plan, they don't know anything about it. You know, they just see us as Villa coming back into the Premier League. They might stay up, they might not. You know, they don't understand the visions that these people have. And I just can't wait. I can't wait for this journey to really kick in. I do think it will kick in, and we will, you know, progressively move up that league table. And I think that we can be a force again.
I totally agree. I remember Saturday talking with my dad, and it was a really great father son moment, and it brought me back to the playoff final when we beat Derby, and I kept saying to my dad on Saturday, Villa are back, and we 100% are back.
Yeah,
and I totally agree. I don't remember being this happy about the Villa, I think, ever. Like, you know, I'm 21 and I've never, that was the first trophy, except for the Intertoto Cup, that I've seen Villa win. You know, I've seen Villa being two cup finals in my time, and that was the Carling Cup and the FA Cup. And they were both, you know, I don't really want to remember the FA Cup. I remember the Carling Cup only for the Vidic incident. But going back to being, you know, being this happy and this almost content about the Villa. For many summer transfer windows, I remember when O'Neill was in charge and he left and we were stranded. I remember having the money to spend with O'Neill or maybe at post O'Neill and not being able to spend it because Randy Lerner didn't trust who he had in charge. And I think it all comes down to bad management. But, you know, I don't know if you remember the clip with David Bradley, the Harry Potter star, and he's obviously a big Villa fan. And it was a video that Villa put on a couple of years ago. And his quote was, the highs can only get higher, you know. And I think that's what's going to happen. But also, the lows will also get higher too. And I honestly really can't wait. I remember going into this summer transfer window not worrying about anything that regarding the Villa. We're back in the Premier League. We had the money to spend. Whether we spent it or not, I think we still would have done great business if we didn't spend as much. But we did. And I remember every day, I remember being quite impatient about some signings because we obviously wanted Mings to sign and he wasn't signing for a few weeks. And I remember, you know, all the people putting on Twitter, announce Mings. Not something that I agree with. Just let the player sign. But I think doesn't that show that all the Villa fans are coming together as one again? Because we know what great times are ahead for our football club.
Yeah, no, and it is brilliant on match days and stuff, and just the general atmosphere. Now we must go on. We're digressing a little bit now. Fantasy football. We're going to have a quick look at the heart of the whole fantasy football table after week one. For some reason, I don't know why. Listen, league table means nothing right now, but I would really like to thank everyone who did get involved, by the way, and join the league. I'm not sure how many entrants there are, but my current position is 665th. So so there must be quite a few of you. The early leader is Brian Hanna with his team Oswego Villa on 122 points. I mean, he's got almost double what I've got, I think. How did you get on, Tom? Are you in the league? You know, how did you get on?
I'm in the process of joining the league. I think I'll join after this weekend. But I'm top of some other leagues. I've got 81 points, and I'm quite impressed with how well I've done.
Oh, nice. I mean, looking at Oswego's Villa's team, he used his triple captain early doors, so that's him screwed for the rest of the season. He had Sterling. I mean, how anyone uses Sterling, how anyone uses their triple captain on the first week, you get one a season, and he's punted on Sterling, bearing in mind, you know, it's the first week, it's the first weekend, and you know, I mean, fair play to him, but Van Dijk, he had his vice-captain, who obviously got on the score sheet, let's have a little look, he had Rashford up top, who got two goals, he had Super John McGinn as well, so he certainly had a good week there. I mean, I had a mare personally, I had Cathcart and Hollabass. I looked at Watford's first few games, and I've got to be honest, I didn't think they'll concede many. And obviously, lo and behold, they go and get stuff 3-0 at home to Brighton on the opening day. So, what can you do? Tom, it's been great having you on. I've got to wrap things up now, unfortunately, but I'm sure you know next week we'll be back on it. And I look forward to it. But lastly, before you go, what's your score predictions for Saturday?
I'm going to go 2/3-1 Villa.
2/3-1 Villa. I'm going to go with 2-1 Villa. I think it'll be a relatively tight game for a period of time. People, you know, getting to know one another, the opposition, and a bit of prodding and probing. But I think Villa will eventually get through the trapdoor. And I fancy a 2-1 win. And I'm going with McGinn to score first again. On Friday, unfortunately, that is the end of the show. But on Friday, I will be publishing our Bournemouth preview to the blog. So make sure you have a little read of that. That's basically a view from the opposition. That'll be with Tom Crocker from the Bournemouth Echo. So please make sure you check that out once it's up. I'll make sure it's posted on the Heart of the Hulk Twitter. And hopefully we'll win on Saturday, up the Villa, and see you all next week.
Unfortunately, it's the time of the show where we need to wrap things up. However, we will be back next week to discuss all the main topics surrounding Aston Villa Football Club. All of us at Heart of the Holt would really appreciate any feedback, and if you enjoyed the pod, it would be great if you could share it or forward it on to a fellow villain. Thank you for listening, and up the Villa!